More Idaho Matters from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Former President Donald Trump is facing several court cases in the next few months, and he is invoking parts of the U.S. Constitution in his defense. Trump says he is immune to prosecution for anything that happened while he was president. He also says his criminal prosecution interferes with the presidential election. So how does the Constitution weigh in on these points? Dr. David Adler, the president of the Alturas Institute, will tackle these questions next Wednesday during one of his constitutional conversations at the Yawkey Center in Boise, and he's joining us live now. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Gemma. Good to be with you as always.
So, Dr. Adler, can we quickly review what Trump has been charged with?
Sure. He's been charged with many counts of criminal actions, the most prominent of which, I think, in terms of the American public's interest, are those brought by Jack Smith, fraud, obstruction of justice, attempt to prevent the peaceful transfer of power, the attempt to deprive Americans of their right to vote and have their right and have their vote counted. These are among the most serious charges that, at least right now, are pending before the federal court for a scheduled March 4 trial before Judge Chutkan. We'll see if that calendar holds.
Okay, so the former president is making several claims in his defense. Now, the first, as I mentioned, he says he's immune to anything for anything that happened while he was president. Dr. Adler, is there anything in the Constitution or a past precedent to support his claim? Because we should note that these issues around insurrection were put into place after the Civil War when there was an insurrection.
That's quite right. So those are important questions, Gemma. So first of all, let's note that the original Constitution, written in 1787, provides no evidence or statement of support whatever for the claim that a president, sitting president or former president, is immune from criminal prosecution. In the Constitutional Convention, the framers were at pains to subordinate the president to the rule of law, indeed to make him amenable to the judicial process. And very interestingly, Gemma, inside the Constitutional Convention, the framers addressed only one possible exception to criminal liability, and that was to grant to members of Congress in Article 1, Section 6, immunity from prosecution during their attendance in Congress. They were immune from prosecution as they went to Congress, went home, except in cases of treason or breach of the peace. But the framers squarely addressed the question of whether or not to grant the president a similar immunity, and they decided not to. Charles Pinckney, who was one of the most robust, frequent participants in the Constitutional Convention, and he hailed from South Carolina, told the Senate in 1800 that we considered granting the president immunity. We rejected it. And James Iredell, the member of the first Supreme Court of North Carolina, told his state ratifying convention that the president is indeed triable. And James Wilson, second in importance only to James Madison as an architect of the Constitution, said that the president is not granted any privileges not annexed to ordinary citizens, and said very powerfully that the president is amenable to the law and nobody should be secure while he violates the Constitution and the laws of the United States. So in answer to your question, there's no clause in the Constitution that speaks to presidential immunity. And indeed, when the framers squarely confronted the question, they rejected it out of hand.
So, Dr. Adler, I know that at one point, a judge in this case said, we have presidents, not kings. And then during some of the arguments this week in front of this appeals panel in D.C., former President Trump's attorney was asked a question about, so if you are saying he is immune from anything, does that would that basically mean if a president wanted to have their political rival killed, they could do that? And his attorney basically said, well, yes, and then he'd get impeached and then they could prosecute him.
That's stunning.
In some way.
Stunning, Gemma. It's outrageous. No president in our history has ever claimed the authority to assassinate a political rival. Let's remember that the president is subject to the law. And of course, anybody who would attempt to assassinate a political opponent would be subject to that law. The president's no different. The attorney for Donald Trump fell through a trap door there, because in asserting absolute immunity, he was asserting a claim without foundation, no foundation in the constitutional architecture, not in the text, not in the Constitutional Convention debates, no Supreme Court decision, nothing in our history. And then, as you point out, he then tried to say that, well, the only grounds for convicting a president would be if he has been impeached and convicted by the Senate. But this is wholly preposterous to find in the impeachment clause of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 3, Paragraph 7, the idea that a president could derive immunity from criminal prosecution through the very device created to bring an errant president to heel, that is, to protect the nation from presidential abuse of power and threats to Republican principles and values, is beyond ironic. But it represents, Gemma, a very tortured, twisted abuse of the language of the impeachment clause. It distorts the aims and purposes of that clause, and it's without merit. But let's understand the implications of such a grotesque argument. Fundamentally, it would mean that the president could not face criminal prosecution unless first he's impeached and then convicted by the Senate, which would mean then that the United States Senate would replace the criminal justice system to decide whether or not a president could be subjected to criminal prosecution. And members of the Senate, of course, are acting for political reasons. Impeachment is all about trying somebody for political offenses against the nation. And if the senators were to assume this role, let's think about the fact that senators then would replace every body and every agency in our criminal justice system. They would replace prosecutors, grand juries, jurors, and even judges. And there's no evidence for the claim, Gemma, because the framers directly address this question about immunity for the president and rejected it. And this would place the president above the law. And let's understand that if the Senate chose not to convict a president who had been impeached, then, according to Trump's attorneys, there's no possibility of trying the president on criminal charges.
Well, and Dr. Adler, I mean, just in my lifetime, there have been two presidents who have been impeached, a Democrat, Bill Clinton, a Republican, Donald Trump. Donald Trump was impeached more than once. Neither of them were convicted by the Senate because that Senate at those times aligned with those particular presidents. These are political stunts in a lot of ways, for lack of a better term. So with that said, not only is his attorney using this impeachment clause, but by using the impeachment clause, isn't he also potentially arguing that he's not immune from everything?
Well, that's right. You've identified the contradiction. The attorney moved from the claim of absolute immunity to the lone exception about impeachment and conviction by the Senate in an impeachment trial. Of course, that claim does great violence to the aims and purposes of the impeachment clause. And as you rightly pointed out, there's such a high bar in the impeachment clause to convict a president of impeachable offenses, two-thirds of the Senate, that it's unlikely to ever happen, which would mean then that a president might commit a crime. We could all watch a crime unfold As we indeed we did on January 6th, when Donald Trump urged the his followers to go to the Capitol to fight like hell, to essentially stop or overturn the solemn constitutional process of verifying the Electoral College votes. And he could not be subjected to trial, a criminal trial, because the Senate had failed to act. But the Senate might fail to act for the most partisan reasons, because of party affiliation, partisan allegiances. And so, as I say, that would completely undermine the idea that the president is subject to the law. I think what listeners want to remember, of course, is that in the Constitutional Convention, the framers severed the political process of impeachment from our criminal justice system. They did that, frankly, because in England, from which we learned a great deal about impeachment, the framers knew and recoiled from the fact that somebody might be impeached by Parliament and also then sent to the Tower of London. The framers wanted to divorce the two processes. As James Wilson said, they're entirely different. The case is that impeachment is based on, you know, different principles, different maxims than the criminal justice system. And so that's why the impeachment clause prevents punishment beyond removal from office and disqualification, if the Senate chooses, for the person to ever hold office again. And as the clause provides, that person is still subject to criminal prosecution. And James Wilson said that the offense on an impeachable conviction is no bar to a trial for the same offense under the law.
So, Dr. Adler, I just have a few minutes left with you, and I really want to get to this other part of this entire argument, and that is that former President Trump is also saying that these trials are interfering with this year's presidential election, going so far to say that they subvert democracy. So with that said, when we look at the Constitution, what does the Constitution say? And in the eyes of the Constitution, should the cases against the former president continue while he is running for president?
Yes, a great question. The Constitution is silent, entirely silent on the question. The reality is the framers probably could not have contemplated the idea that a presidential candidate might be laboring under indictment, that the American people would not be interested in supporting a candidate who might well be a convicted felon by the time the election is held. Nevertheless, it's an important question, and my view is that the rule of law is such a fundamental feature of American constitutionalism that it cannot be delayed or disturbed by the fact of an election. The trials should go forward, even if they represent an obstacle for somebody seeking political office, that the defendant has to navigate that. And we should remember that in our constitutional democracy, Gemma, the rule of law is a critical feature of our system. And the process has to work its way, both in the courts of law and on the campaign trail. So this is not interference in the election process. Indeed, for Trump to make that claim is really rich. It's beyond ironic because, of course, he brought all this upon himself when on January 6th, he and his followers tried to stop the democratic process. They tried to stop the decision of the American people to elect Joe Biden and to complete the peaceful transfer of power when Congress convened to count the electoral votes and to certify them. So it's beyond ironic that Trump would claim that voters should decide who serves in office, not the courts, when he in fact tried to thwart the will of the people, the ultimate feature of American democracy.
Dr. Adler, I have just about a minute left with you. So what is next in the legal process against Trump? Because I have to tell you, there are so many cases that I have a hard time keeping them straight.
Well, it's head spinning, isn't it, Gemma? It's
It
hard to
is.
keep up. It's hard to keep up. And there are big question marks because, as you know now, the appellate court in DC just heard the arguments about immunity for the president from criminal prosecution. We don't know what the DC Circuit Court will hold. I would bet virtually all my money that the court will hold that the president does not enjoy immunity from criminal prosecution. But then the question arises, will the entire DC Court of Appeals hear that case en banc, or will the court send it back to the trial judge to proceed, or will there be an appeal to the Supreme Court? Will the court hear it? The court might well say, we don't want to take up this DC court decision holding that the president does not enjoy immunity from criminal prosecution because there is none. We're not going to waste our time with such a case, in which case the case would go back to perhaps the March 4 calendar date for a trial. It's likely to be delayed a bit because there are other delaying tactics that Trump can engage in. But I do think that we will have a trial of Donald Trump on the in the insurrection case, certainly by late spring, if not sooner.
Well, Dr. Adler, as always, really appreciate your expertise in this. Really interesting conversation. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed. Because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to Life Kit from NPR.